This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. We're talking about blood cancers today. Now, healthy blood cells are important for our body to function normally, but for people who have been diagnosed with blood cancers, the production and function of these blood cells are affected. So to help us understand more about the different types of blood cancers and how we can treat them, we'll be speaking to Dr. Tengku Ahmad Hidayah, consultant hematologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. If you have any questions for Dr. Tengku, you can call us at 03 77332900. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon, Dr. Tengku. How are you
today?
Good
afternoon. Hi, thanks for having me here.
You know, it's a bit of a serious topic considering this is the start of Bulan Ramadan.
Yep, heavy.
But I think it's important because the topic of cancer usually frightens a lot of people, but cancer is becoming more common. So I think it's important to just have a better understanding of what it is and what are our options when it comes to conditions like this. We're doing a sort of overview look at blood cancers today because there are several different types. So perhaps we can start with a general understanding of what are blood cancers.
Yep, blood cancers, the other name is what it is, liquid tumor. So it's quite a big, this is a big topic. So we'll just have an overview of what we're going to talk about today. So when I mention blood cancer, usually it's about leukemia, lymphoma, multiple myeloma, and there are other rarer. It's already rare, but there are even more rare types of cancer. They're mouthful: myelodysplastic syndrome, MDS, and myeloproliferative neoplasm, MPN. But we'll focus on the big three. Leukemia, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma today.
Right, right. Okay. And you call them liquid tumors.
Yeah, because they're the blood from the blood. It's a sort of a colloquial term. Some American professor labeled it. And then for me, at that time, I thought it was sounded quite interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
So the difference between a blood cancer, or so-called liquid tumor, and other cancers where you have a solid tumor growing, if you could explain where the cancer cells originate in when it comes to blood cancers.
Okay, there's two groups. When we have the blood system is called the hematopoietic system. So we'll get a bit scientific here. Then after that, the lymphoma comes from the lymphoid system. If we talk about blood cancers, the one that appears in our blood, we call it leukemia. So they start from the hematopoietic system. They divide into other types. There's the myeloid type, lymphoid type. So I think I will just
We could go into that later.
Then lymphoma is from the lymph nodes, but they may even appear in other, we call it extranodal, outside the lymph nodes.
All right.
So those are atypical presentations of the tumors.
And multiple myeloma?
Multiple myeloma is actually a disease. It's a subset of a problem from a lymphoid. It's from the cell, we call it a plasma cell, which produces antibodies. So in any cancer, they proliferate. They're not good. They keep proliferating, but they don't die. So they produce abnormal amounts of antibody, which is not good.
How common are blood cancers in Malaysia?
They are not too common, but they're among the top 10, but it's not top 5 for sure. So leukemia and lymphoma is it's in the top 10, but not multiple myeloma.
Right. Yeah. So among the three main ones you've talked about, leukemia and lymphoma are more common.
Yep, leukemia and lymphoma.
And overall blood cancers are just among the top 10.
Yeah, among top 10, but not the top 10.
All right. Maybe then we could go into each of these main ones. Leukemia, you've talked about it originating in the blood cells. What exactly is happening? What are the cancer cells doing?
So in leukemia, we'll divide it into two groups. There's acute and chronic.
Right.
So the acute, we divide further, I'll divide it to more general terms, to acute myeloid leukemia, we call it AML. Then another type is acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And the chronic, we divide to chronic myeloid leukemia. And the other one is chronic lymphocytic leukemia.
All right.
So when we talk about acute, this is all very very immature cells. We call it blast. So they due to a certain event, genetic abnormality, environmental exposure, people do ask me, we'll talk about the cause later, they form this many amounts of blast. So in your normal marrow, your hematopoietic center, progenitor cell center, you're supposed to have normal amounts, but this blast may even go up to 90%, and it consumes this marrow space, as we say it. So it doesn't, all your normal other white cells that should be produced get suppressed, and that's what happened. So they divided to two groups, myeloid, AML, and ALL.
Right.
For chronic, they take some more time. They like any cancer, as I said, the keyword is proliferation without apoptosis, without cell death.
So the cells just keep multiplying.
They don't die off. So there's a signal that something wrong when happened. So chronic, they occur more slowly, indolently, and for both cases of CML and CLL.
What factors would determine whether it becomes acute or chronic?
Unfortunately, there's no explanation. Some chronic type of leukemia, they suddenly there's some they change into acute. They call it blastic transformation.
Right.
So it becomes when it happens, that becomes poor prognosis.
Okay, I see. And obviously, the differences also would be in terms of how you approach treatment.
Yes,
for
exactly.
acute and
yes.
chronic.
Yes, and they have a different. Each tumor have its different age group, different presentations, and different approach in treatment. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about treatment, the outlines of treatment later.
But just curious to know, with blood cancers, do you stage them the same way that you do with solid tumors?
Yes. For lymphoma, since it's sort of still a tissue, lymph node tissue, we stage them. Mm-hmm. We have this classical, we go basic one, they call it Ann Arbor staging. So we use the diaphragm as a sort of cutoff point. Mm-hmm. If lymphoma, one side of the diaphragm, up and below, whether it's just one side up or below,
right.
is stage one. And stage two is, if it's still both above the diaphragm but different groups, stage two.
Right.
And stage three will be both sides of the diaphragm, up and below. Stage four will be distant metastasis, when it's not a nodal organ. Just for instance, you have liver metastasis, lung metastasis, so it's already stage four by then. For leukemia, it's a bit different because your blood is everywhere.
That's right.
We cannot stage it. But we do have staging mechanism by based on the... we prognosticate according to patient's age, the white cell presentation, and there are also genetic markers that decides whether it's good or normal or even high risk.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. And, you know, leukemia can also be classified as lymphocytic or myelogenous.
Myeloblastic. Myeloid leukemia or lymphoblastic leukemia.
So that's the two types that you were talking about earlier. Yeah. And lymphoma now, so as you very briefly already explained, it affects the lymphoid.
Yes.
So the lymph nodes, originating in the lymph nodes.
Lymph nodes, yeah.
Actually, maybe a very quick explanation about the role of the lymph nodes in our system.
The lymph nodes in the system is the place where your lymphocytes, still produced in your bone marrow, your hematopoietic system, the progenitor cells, but it goes to the lymph node for maturation. That's where it gets diversified, gets its markers. So the whole idea of your lymph nodes is it forms part of your immune system. Mm-hmm. But when a trigger happens, they become cancerous. So whatever is cancerous, they suppress whatever the immune system that you have, while these cancer cells and the products produces abnormal amounts of substance that makes it not good and since it's cancer. Yeah.
The lymphatic system also deals with drainage.
Yeah, drainage. So just say you have an abscess somewhere in the abdomen. You have a lymph node group there. Or you have an infection anywhere, you have a lymph node group there, which is in charge of helping out the immune system to beat the infection. For instance, you may have lymph node swelling when you have infection. You have a bad abscess in your face. Mm-hmm. You may get lymph node swelling at the neck because the neck is, we call it reactive lymph node. So it's supposed to attack the infection and help the immune system to beat the infection there. Okay. But in lymphoma, there's no infection. They just become big, they become cancerous,
right,
and they proliferate.
Okay. And of course, we've heard very often people talking about Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. What are the differences there?
So lymphoma, there's two big groups, yes, Hodgkin and non-Hodgkin. The Hodgkin lymphoma is the less common one, actually. They're divided to these other two types, classical Hodgkin lymphoma and nodular lymphocyte predominant Hodgkin lymphoma.
All right.
And the classical Hodgkin lymphoma is further divided. It's going to a lecture now. So, yeah, there's a lot.
In layperson's terms.
So there's a lot of subsets. So, but the best would be classical and this nodular lymphocyte predominant lymphoma.
All right. And then, the difference between those two?
Yes, they have different. When we identify these cancer cells under the microscope, they have different markers. And therefore, different approach to therapy and different prognosis.
Right, okay.
Yep.
And so then that's Hodgkin.
Non-Hodgkin, you divide it into B. There's many ways to divide non-Hodgkin's. There's the aggressive type. There's the more indolent type. And when you talk about non-Hodgkin lymphoma, there's a B cells. Because where your lymphocytes produce into B cells or T cells, and in charge of different types of immune system. So B cells, the more common one you can hear is diffuse large B cell lymphoma. But you have also follicular lymphoma. That's under non-Hodgkin. Then T cell non-Hodgkin lymphoma is not as common. You have the peripheral T cell lymphoma and so forth. So that's another group. So each is a big topic. It can be a topic on its own.
And probably not something we want to go into here. Yeah. But actually, what is the main difference? Is it in terms of presentation, you know, between Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's?
Actually, the presentation is not that different. It's the identification on... usually, a few years back, when we say, I remember my professor saying, non-Hodgkin is non and no good. Hodgkin is good, but no cancer is good. Yeah. But as I go on, as we get all these updates, some Hodgkin lymphoma are very stubborn to treat. It's very difficult to treat. They keep coming back. They keep relapsing.
Mm.
Non-Hodgkin lymphomas, the main difference for us is mainly we look at is the immunohistochemistry, how they look under the microscope with different stains. When we stain it with chemical preparation, so it looks different and the outcomes are also different.
I see. Yeah. And is age of presentation?
Exactly. Age is Hodgkin lymphoma, and for you talk about leukemia, some we go back to leukemia, like ALL is more common in the younger group, and they peak at two different parts. For ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia, they peak at childhood and one point at elderly. AML is mainly an elderly disease. Myeloma is an elderly disease.
Mm-hmm.
CML, chronic myeloid leukemia, is a disease of more young age group.
Mm-hmm.
And CLL is disease of more older age group. Yeah.
So it's interesting, isn't it? Different types are peaking at different age groups.
Yeah.
We will get to myeloma after the break. We're talking to Dr. Tengku Ahmad Hidayah, consultant hematologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara, about blood cancers today. You can call us if you have a question, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. I'll be getting to an understanding of what is multiple myeloma, as well as what does all this mean to somebody who has a blood cancer? What are the treatment options and what kind of prognosis are we looking at? You're listening to BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. I'm speaking to Dr. Tengku Ahmad Hidayah today. He's a consultant hematologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. We are doing sort of an overview of blood cancers.
Yes.
So that includes leukemia, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma. Before the break, Dr. Tengku has already explained about the differences between leukemia and lymphoma. I guess to a layperson, it could sound the same, but the leukemia originates in the blood cells, whereas lymphoma affects the lymph nodes.
Yeah. That's right. System.
And now there's multiple myeloma.
Yes.
How's that one different?
Okay, multiple myeloma. So it's actually a product of abnormal plasma cells. Mm-hmm. Plasma cells is derived from the B cells. So it proliferates. We'll hear a lot of that word. It doesn't die.
Mm-hmm.
A normal plasma cell is used to produce your antibody to fight infection, to ward off infection. But what happened is it produced so many antibodies, no good antibodies. Cancerous is a product of a cancer cell, and they proliferate in the marrow. So they have a very complex pathogenesis and pathophysiology, meaning they have some immune dysregulation. So the outcome of the disease, simply said, it causes renal impairment, because this product of this antibody can clog up your kidneys. Mm-hmm. Among one of the cause of renal impairment. It causes, it eats up your bone. And you can see people having abnormal fractures, mean low impact fractures or punch out lesions on the x-ray.
Mm-hmm.
You may get anemia because the bone marrow space is filled by these abnormal cancer cells. You get suppression. And you may get, so that's the whole system. We even call it CRAB. C for calcium, mm-hmm. R for renal,
mm-hmm.
A for anemia, B is for bone lesions. It's part of the diagnostic criteria.
Right.
So you have abnormal plasma cells, abnormal antibodies, and causes a haywire. And the outcome of this, actually, we have not found a cure for it, despite many treatments, but we have found a way to prolong survival. And it is a disease of elderly. So the main aim of the treatment is to prolong survival for these patients.
Right.
Yeah.
It does sound pretty terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, can
but this is rare. It's not too common. But sometimes you wonder, people, when you hear people sakit tua,
mm-hmm.
that it makes you wonder why some malignancies, including multiple myeloma, is one of them.
That's just not recognized.
Yes.
And speaking of recognizing or identifying blood cancers, I mean, what would be the signs that would bring somebody to your attention?
Okay, so the common presentation for leukemia is usually an incidental finding of anemia, or even patient feels tired. Anemia means you have low hemoglobin, you feel tired, you can even pass out, you have dizziness, you have all palpitations. That's because your HB is affected, your red cells.
Secondly,
your white cell is affected, your normal white cell. You get fever and infection. And thirdly, your platelet is affected. So you get this abnormal bleeding and bruising. That's a warning sign. Nobody bleeds normally. So you have to, unless it's from normal causes, but you bleed spontaneously or low impact, that's not normal.
Mm.
Then you may get lymph node enlargement in cases like ALL or CLL. You may get spleen or your liver enlargement. And for the lymphoma, you get lymph node swelling.
Mm-hmm.
You do get this liver or spleen enlargement. And there's a symptom called B symptoms. You get this unexplained fever, prolonged fever, more than 2 weeks. You get night sweats. And you have a 10% unintentional weight loss, unless you intend to lose your weight. But 10% unintentional weight loss in the space of 6 months. Mm-hmm. So those are the warning signs.
Unexplained,
unintentional weight loss.
Okay.
Yes.
We have a caller on the line. Good afternoon, Shen. You have a question.
Hello, Shen.
Hi there, Dr. Dr. Gray. I love what you've been saying so far. I've got a simple question for you.
Do I know you, Shen?
Sorry?
Do I know you, Shen?
Your question,
no,
Shen?
Yeah.
Okay, this is the first time I've called in ever.
Yeah, thanks.
I was wondering, because last time there used to be all these things about blood cleansing, cleaning your blood. There was this group that would say they had this chocolate and they wanted to clean their blood. I was just wondering whether or not, I know for a fact that doesn't make sense, but is there a scientific way to do the same thing that they mentioned as well? Just wondering that as well.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your question, okay. Shen.
This is the first time I heard a chocolate cleansing, blood cleansing chocolate.
Is this detox?
Detox, you do get people having detox from tea, but blood cleansing, the only way to clean your blood is having a normal kidney, normal liver.
the organs that do the job.
So, but you do have, I think there will be questions since we are on it already, blood cleansing, like Bekam, cupping. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's one way of cleaning. But it's mainly traditional. Cupping and Bekam in Malay, a lot of say there's the prophet's teaching. And that's, for me, I cannot comment too much about it because those are traditional methods and it involves sunnah. So I'm not an expert in it, but I have an answer for this. At that time, the best treatment available was cupping and Bekam, and the prophet went to that. So we have advances in treatment now. Mm-hmm. So you go for whatever the best available treatment there is to clean your blood, to treat your cancer or any disease. So that's how I would approach patients and explain to patients that.
Can you explain what Bekam
is? Bekam is cupping where they actually, there's a lot of cups. There is like sort of vacuum suction. Somehow the mechanism is the blood gets sucked out of it. A lot of people do it. I don't know why. A funny one would be they say men does not have periods. So, we need to take out our normal blood. But men are not supposed to have periods.
Full stop.
Period. Okay, so yeah. So period, they're not designed to have periods. Yeah, but so a lot of people like to think that. But I do have a scientific way of cleaning the blood. We have blood disorders like in MPN where the blood becomes so thick. I intentionally draw blood out. We take out 300 cc's and to bring down the red cell levels, because high red cell can cause stroke or even heart attacks. So that's another topic altogether. Mm. So.
Well, Azhar on WhatsApp was asking about Bekam, which you have addressed, but he also asked about whether there's any scientific basis for ketum to treat leukemia.
Okay, ketum, I have no experience in ketum, that's another type of traditional medicine they get. They call it Sabah snake grass.
Mm-hmm,
a lot of patients take it. And we found out there is actually some amount of the conventional chemotherapy is available in that Sabah snake grass. But you have to take humongous amounts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you have to eat it like it's lunch, breakfast, dinner. So there is some basis of this, because any conventional treatment, they start off somewhere from traditional treatment. So maybe this can help you, Azhar. Yeah.
I mean, it may not be Bekam, it may not be Ketum, it could be any other.
Yeah.
I mean, many people, when they've been diagnosed with cancer, they turn to different sources to help them find relief.
Yeah.
I mean, what is your general advice to patients who are looking at exploring? And I know that many of them are afraid to tell.
I think it's the fear, because the first thing I need to do, which we'll talk about diagnosing, is doing a bone marrow test. The moment they hear bone marrow test, they run away.
Mm.
And the stigma with chemotherapy is so bad, we don't even have to talk about stem cell therapy, because the stigma of chemotherapy in their mind, we have chemotherapy, we're going to die. But right now, that's the role of doctors. We are there to control the toxicity. Of course, I'm without any doubt, all this treatment, all this investigation has its risk, but we are trained and we know what's going to happen. And we will help the patient along the journey of the treatment. So that's why most patients run away, because I think we also as doctors have to improve our counseling technique, encourage them rather than pummel them with fear.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've talked about a bone marrow biopsy for diagnosis.
Yes.
Is it really as scary as it sounds? What is involved?
That's two. They even bone marrow test is where they even confuse it with the spinal tap, lumbar procedure, because anything with tulang belakang, anywhere involving the backbone, they're scared of one, of course, paralysis. But this bone marrow aspirate, commonly in adult, we do it on the hip bone, which is far from the spine, far from any vital organs, far from any vessels. So the risk of bleeding and organ injury is still there, but very minuscule. And I will try to... It's not the first thing usually I tell patients. I give them time to address the disease first. So I will give them some time before talking about this bone marrow and later treatment.
Mm.
So I think we doctors have to be better in our counselling methods in how to deal with these patients.
And is the bone marrow test the only method?
For leukemia, yes. For lymphoma, you do the biopsy. So you need you can have the surgeons. We can have help with other colleagues to do the biopsy. It's a whole lymph node biopsy. Look under the microscope, stain it with this test called immunohistochemistry. Then we get it. Myeloma needs bone marrow diagnosis as well. So a lot of when you deal with cancers in general, you need in marrow done. In even lymphoma, we do it because we need to stage the disease.
Mm.
Because if it's in the bone marrow, it's already considered stage 4.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about treatment options then.
Okay.
You know, do we look at blood cancers generally, or does each type have its own treatment approach?
Each type has its different treatment.
Okay. Let's start with leukemia then.
Okay. Leukemia, so we will divide into risk, low risk, and high risk. The acute, I'll tell the good ones first. The best is the outcome is for chronic myeloid leukemia. Previously, you require transplant and chemotherapy to treat it. But in late 1998, early 2000, a wonder drug is sort of breakthrough medicine called imatinib. It's an oral medicine. You take it orally, and the survive and the approach to treatment cancer in general and CML in and cancer in general has changed. One of it is due to this this wonder drug, call it. So you just take it orally, and that's the response is up from patients having needing transplant with mortality rate up to with success rate of 20-30%. It went to up. The update of this study in 2017, that's 80% 10-year survival. When you talk about cancer, 10-year survival, 80% is amazing because you can die, means you die of other causes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's CML.
Mm-hmm.
Then you talk about acute leukemia. It's a combination. You will require chemotherapy, but there are also targeted therapies. For instance, there's a treatment in a type of AML called APML. It was a very horrible disease before this, from close to 90% mortality because of this special vitamin A product, all trans-retinoic acid, in combination with chemotherapy. The outcome has reversed up to 80 to 90% remission.
Right.
So this, there are more coming, more type of these drugs coming. We are hopeful. And of course, there are some treatment, some type of leukemia, AML, you still have very bad prognosis because you have elderly, people who are elderly, high white cell presentation, they have poor outcomes, poor cytogenetics. So we just save who we can, and we'll try to support. We'll also select the patients carefully. If a patient is not fit for chemo, we will not give the chemo.
So if they're not fit for chemo, what are their options?
They are palliative options. Palliative care is a lot of people thinking is giving up, but we have learned how to embrace mortality and having quality of life up to the end of life, and that's an option. But that should not be the first option. Means if you have a chance to go for treatment, go for it.
Okay. We are talking about blood cancers today with Dr. Tengku Ahmad Hidayat, a consultant hematologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. When we come back from the break, we will look at the treatment options for the other types. We haven't talked about lymphoma and multiple myeloma yet. And also stem cell transplants. That's a major treatment approach that has proven to be a cure for some patients. So if you have any questions, you can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao Eek. I'm speaking to Dr. Tengku Ahmad Hidayat, consultant hematologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. Today, we're talking about blood cancers, Dr.
Yes.
Tengku. You know, we've covered sort of what are the differences between leukemia, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma. Those are the three main ones. We've talked about the different sort of the different prognosis because they're broken down into so many specific types.
Yes.
It's hard to get into each of them, isn't it? But we're looking at treatment options, and generally it seems that for leukemia and lymphoma, there's so much good news with the modern advances.
Yeah. So if you split it into three, there's chemotherapy,
it's
classic chemocytotoxic therapy. Targeted therapies are the, it's not only for blood cancers, even for other solid tumor cancers, that's the term now. Then, but with us, there's an additional area of treatment called bone marrow transplant or hematopoietic stem cell transplant. When I mention stem cell here, refer to the blood stem cell, because there's other types of stem cells you hear. Those are called mesenchymal because they are from another progenitor. Mm-hmm. Most, I do not want to comment about that, and still, since most are still under research, but the proven stem cell is hematopoietic or bone marrow transplant.
Okay, yeah. And if you could help us understand, how does a bone marrow transplant work in the treatment of a blood cancer?
So bone marrow transplant, we divide it into two. We call it autologous transplant. Autologous transplant means it's from the patient himself or herself. Allogeneic transplant is from a donor. Usually it's a sibling, a matched donor, but you may have unrelated matched donor as well. So the whole premise, we still start with the autologous transplant is used in treatment of lymphoma and myeloma in general. Mm-hmm. As part of the whole artillery of treatment in these two types. So it's almost like a reboot of the system. Because what is important is after we control the disease with any treatment, be it chemotherapy or targeted therapy or in combination, we will collect the stem cell from the patient himself, store it, this sort of for reserve. And when we give, when we go for treatment stem cell, what we give is, we call it conditioning chemo, which is a strong chemo. It's sort of very strong chemo with which will hopeful to kill off the cancer, but it will also clear off your bone marrow. Mm-hmm. So that's why after we give them the strong chemo, after a few days, or they will reinfuse the stem cell. The stem cell will smartly home into the bone marrow and start replenishing. And a good outcome, you may see even patient after 2 weeks being discharged, mm-hmm, with this autologous. Mm. When allogenic, is a bit different because it's mainly reserved for leukemia. Because the main problem is with the marrow. So in general, we do not want to take the patient's marrow, which is already diseased. Mm-hmm. So you have a donor. So when we have this HLA typing, HLA matched donor is the best donor. It's usually sibling. Mm-hmm. A parent cannot, because it only have half of your HLA.
Right.
So the best outcome comes with this. The additional benefit of this, it has this graft versus disease effect, meaning the donor's immune system will attack the cancer. Mm-hmm. So it's very smart and quite wonderful in a way when you think about it. But it also comes with side effect, because at this point in time, you are wiping out the patient's immune system. And this graft versus disease effect may come up with other problem where it attacks the healthy organs. We call it the graft versus host disease. So this may affect the liver, the skin, the tract. But don't worry, we have the medication to control this. Even despite medication, complications may occur, but that's where the hematologist will be there to guide the treatment and control the disease and as well as the side effects of the treatment.
What is the prognosis after a stem cell transplant?
So, usually the is different disease is different prognosis. Of course, the leukemia is still not as good as lymphoma, but when we talk about, when we tell the chances to the patient, we're hoping to get even 80% remission rate with the treatment, and less than 10-20% mortality or morbidity, means the side effect. But some disease are so horrible, because when patient has leukemia, they're already not good to begin with. Some of them may get infections in and out. They already have the disease, and they themselves are not that fit. So selection of patients to go for transplant is also another important criteria.
Yeah. So how do you decide who is a suitable patient for transplant?
One is the disease itself. Some disease without transplant will relapse for sure. Within 5 years or even within 2 to 3 years, it will relapse for some acute leukemia. So that's why we have that risk prognostication. Some may not. We have a watch and wait policy, so we do not transplant. And those with bad cytogenetic profile, poor risk, we transplant upfront. But in lymphoma in general, we do not transplant upfront, because most of the lymphoma will be in remission, but we only reserve this transplant for patients who are refractory, not responding to treatment, meaning needing other salvage treatment, or those patients who relapse. So those kind of patients will need transplant, autologous transplant for this patient.
Okay.
Because we want effect of the chemo, the strong chemo, to wipe out the cancer as much as possible.
Would you say that a transplant has the best outcomes for younger patients?
Yes, because they are more fit they don't have comorbidities. Because the older patients, they have other problems like diabetes, hypertension. And actually, some transplant centers have a cutoff point for allogenic, means from allogenic from other sources,
mm-hmm.
60 years old. And for autologous, yourself stem cell, is 65 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Those are in the government centers. I'm not sure about the other centers in the private.
Okay. We have a question on WhatsApp. May says, I'm 23,
yeah.
Stage 3 Hodgkin's lymphoma after chemo remission for the past 3 years.
Okay.
I'm not taking any vitamins or anything. What would you recommend me to take?
First, congratulations to me. You're a survivor. Three
mm-hmm.
years is good. You take every year as it comes.
Mm-hmm.
You just eat healthy food. Eat healthy food. You want to take supplementary vitamins, it's good. Go ahead. But you do not take any additional supplements or those that are not really accredited from accredited sources. They may want to help you. Some family may even offer you all this, but I know their intention is good, but they may not know, because it can affect your liver, it can affect your kidney. Because if you have an impaired liver, kidney, and heaven forbid your disease relapse, it's not good, because the chemo and chemotherapy and all the complications may affect the kidney and the liver. So if you don't have good liver or kidney to begin with, then it's poor prognosis. And and as I said, take it as you're young. There's a lot ahead of you. And take it as 5 year, then I take it 10 years. So congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also on that note, you know, how do you advise patients about the risk of relapse?
Okay. Once a patient's in remission, we will follow them up, usually frequently for a few months. Then after that, 3 monthly, we'll educate the patients at any signs of the disease coming back, as I mentioned earlier, those symptoms, to come immediately. To us, most hematology centers, we have an open door policy. Our old patients can just walk in and have a check.
Mm.
So, and do not hesitate to come back to the doctors, especially those who has treated them, because they will have all the records.
But yeah. What are the treatment options for somebody who relapses?
They have a second line chemotherapy. Then you have the targeted therapies. So, because targeted therapy is very expensive, and it's still under development. So usually the first line, even in ULU, at the European British guidelines, most of them still go for the first line chemotherapy, because it's been proven. We reserve those poor prognosis, those relapse for those who are relapsing or refractory.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. And, you know, for patients who have undergone the stem cell transplants,
yes.
A relapse is still... Is there a very,
there's
very
still a
small...
Still, when we counsel patients, they're still small. Even after going through all that, the journey of the whole chemotherapy transplant, it still can come back. So we even... most clinics in hematology units, they have a specific stem cell clinics, transplant clinic, to follow up on this patient. And we follow them lifelong.
But again, you know, if you've already done, and that's the reboot of the system,
system,
right? What can you do after that?
Targeted therapies.
Right.
So for especially autologous who has relapsed, there's sometimes allogenic, because if your own immune system is not good enough, there's a, but it doesn't apply to all. It's not a one blanket rule.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was reading, and I don't know how common this is, that some cancer treatments in themselves are so harsh that they can actually lead to a second cancer. And that could be the case with AML, acute myeloid
yep.
leukemia. What are the chances of that?
You may have, once you get treatment with cytotoxic chemotherapy, there's always a chance of the disease, another type of cancer. So even radiotherapy, you may get secondary cancers. So cytotoxic therapy, for instance, we treat you for lymphoma. There's a chance in the future that you may get leukemia or other types of cancer in the future.
Right. Yeah. Okay. We have a question from Izzat. I'll just quickly take this call. Good afternoon, Izzat. You have a question?
Hi. Hi, doctor. Hi. Izzat Halimi here.
Hi, Izzat.
One thing to know, because I hear that people say that if you have cancer and you stop taking sugar, it will help to reduce the growth of the cancer. Is it true?
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much for your question, Izzat.
So, sugar is not good in general. So, you do not... sugar, of course, it comes with all other health problems. But there's no proven
link
to say sugar and cancers, especially when I talk about my leukemia. But you do have this uptake of sugar in lymphoma because your cancer will consume whatever nutrients you take.
Mm-hmm.
So you're including your sugar. Mm-hmm. So when we do a PET scan of a patient lymphoma, it's a scan of this radioactive sugar. It will light up. But don't forget, your body still needs sugar, still need carbohydrate. So don't stop taking sugar. You just take healthy amounts of sugar as it is. But
everything in moderation, right?
Exactly.
It's not just cancer that sugar will have an impact.
I'll extend on that. Some people may not even take protein, daging, meat,
for fear it will feed the cancer.
But you need to be, yourself to be in good nutritional status to fight the cancer, because the chemotherapy alone is not enough. The body itself must be in optimal condition for
so treatment. Like you said just now, just eat healthily, eat well,
yes,
eat a balanced diet.
Exactly.
Do you have a final message about blood cancers?
My final message will be, do not, once it may come without warning, if a patient gets diagnosed or a relative gets diagnosed, seek the doctor, listen to the options, and do not run away from investigation or treatment, because you may come in even in worse condition as when you're first diagnosed.
Okay. Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Dr. Tengku Ahmad Hidayat, consultant hematologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara, about blood cancers. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.